let's get to it, book nerds. On this episode, I'll be speaking with Poppy Gordon about her film, For Your Consideration. Determined to party at Sundance, three entitled young women meet up at an LA members-only club to make a selection-worthy short film in an unholy fashion of wokeness and cluelessness. Piece by piece, they almost give a voice to the voiceless, just without ever having any real idea what they're actually talking about. Let's get to it and have a chat with Poppy Gordon about her new film. All right, book nerds. I'm now speaking with Poppy Gordon, the director of For Your Consideration. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
And hello to you. Thank you for having me on the show.
Absolutely. So for those who may be not familiar with your work or this film, would you please start off with just telling us a little about yourself and this project?
For sure. So my name is Poppy Gordon, and the short film that I made is called For Your Consideration. And it's about a few entitled young women who meet up at an LA members only club to make a selection worthy film and in an unholy fusion of wokeness and cluelessness. They build a narrative from atop their high perch of their privilege. And the scary part is that they almost succeed and give a voice to the voiceless without ever having any idea of what they're actually talking about. But they are perfectly positioned to make it happen. So in other words, it's a few girls that are very kind of Hollywood and LA and very interconnected, whose parents all kind of work in the biz. And they're having a writer's group, and they meet up kind of on a weekly basis, and they try and crack the code of how they too can make an Oscar worthy film. And they've really kind of looked at what types of films do well and what types of films win and get a lot of awards, and they want to join the ranks. So they kind of try and crack the system and get the perfect formula together.
So I'd like to know, curious how, since you directed this, how did you get involved in the project, and what was it like reading the script and then taking that idea and actually, you know, making something out of it?
Sure. Well, to start off with, conceptually, the kernel of it came from me. So the writer, his name is Aldo Arias, and he's a dear friend of mine. We've been working together for a long time. And it was one of those things where Aldo and I, we worked together a lot on commercial projects, AKA for clients, but it's different when you're creating something purely artistic together. And I kind of called him one day and I was like, hey, I have this really rotten idea. It's kind of like, you know, here's the gist of it. This is kind of like, it's all one location, and it's going to be kind of, you know, it's about this, and this is kind of like the format, and these are my influences. Can you help me bring this to life? And surprisingly, he said, actually, yes, I can. And then he took my idea and ran it through his kind of Aldo filter, and he's extremely witty, and we both kind of have the same type of sardonic sense of humor, and tend to kind of make similar cultural observations and whatnot. And we, I guess, in short, we kind of get each other. So he spit something back to me that was totally right on the money, and then you know, I refined it and I kind of become his editor a bit. And then I decided that I wanted to workshop it. And so we put together actors, not the actors that ended up playing the parts. I just wanted to, you know, workshop it with actors without doing the casting. And so I put together kind of a group of actors to workshop it in my studio. And I played around with different types to figure out who I wanted to play who, like what type of person needed to play each person. And we ran through the script. We recorded that. I made edits based on my learnings from working with the actors. So the script changed. We also did some rounds of improv that also influenced the script some more. So we kept on kind of, I would say, just making it really perfect. I like kind of liken it to a novella where it's not just about what's being said, it's also about what's not being said. And it's also very much in the pauses and in the spaces. And, you know, and in that kind of a scenario, it's like every line really counts. So we workshopped it quite a bit. And it was lovely to be able to work with actors in that kind of an experimental way. And then we went into the casting knowing kind of more exactly what I wanted, which was great because when you're in a short, you're on a really tight budget. So, and, you know, getting casting agents to help you on your project and all that and getting good ones and getting good talent, you know, you don't want to waste people's time too much. So it definitely helped knowing kind of what we were envisioning. And I did the casting in LA with some terrific casting agents that were able to just get me a really wide selection pool, which is awesome. And that was really our first indicator that maybe this was going to be good because we had, you know, people lining up the block to kind of be in the short. And
that's awesome.
Everybody who we were auditioning was amazing. That was like really terrific level of talent.
When to continue on the casting aspect, was there anything in particular that, you know, you were really looking for in the actors and actresses? And how did you go about, you know, figuring out kind of like the right look and feel for the characters? Because like you said, it's very kind of, you know, LA snobby-ish, kind of like that, you know, perfect, you know, high up mentality. So I'm curious how you went about like finding the right people for that.
Well, I guess first and foremost, all the actors kind of represent or characters represent a certain archetype, and all the actors, the characters are supposed to know each other since they have a writer's group and they, you know, are kind of getting together on the regular. So we wanted to have a team that does kind of fits together in a great way, and also you can tell what the kind of group dynamics are between them in a fast read. So so we were definitely looking for different archetypes, you know, kind of the one who's maybe has a little bit more of a conscience and you know, sets the group straight, the one that really admires the alpha and doesn't want to ever upset her. You know, kind of, we kind of knew what everybody's group dynamic was, and we had character kind of bios descriptions so that everybody kind of knew how their puzzle piece would fit together. Because we wanted it to kind of be a tight nouveau rich world, one could say. So so what was difficult obviously with the casting is we did go through SAG, and the rules were also such that we couldn't actually then start working with people in clusters and seeing what people would be like in groups. So we could only kind of do individual auditions. So we really had to envision, or I did, you know, what would be the best grouping? How would everybody play off of each other? So that took a little bit of envisioning. But ultimately, I was really happy with the cast that we ended up with. And I think they all did really well. So yeah, it was definitely, you know, different mentalities and different, obviously also ethnicity was a part of it because that's one of the topics of the film is diversity. So that was interesting. Yeah, that was definitely interesting. And then you also don't want to make a Benetton ad, but we're also criticizing the Benetton ad in a way, you know what I mean? So yeah, that definitely made for an interesting casting process.
So touching on, you know, filming in LA, it's always difficult and very expensive and time consuming to film in LA in general, but you have a couple of different locations. Was everything filmed in LA, and kind of how did, I mean, a good portion of it takes place, as the description says, kind of a members only LA club. So I'm curious how the timing was and how difficult was it to film in the different locations with the constraints?
Well, definitely, part of my concept was like, okay, this is the idea. And guess what, Aldo? It's mostly all going to be in one location. So it's totally going to be affordable and I can finance this myself and it's going to be great. Fast forward, so expensive. My savings decimated. Not cool. Wrong.
Life of a filmmaker.
Yeah, that was definitely interesting because I thought, okay, you know, the bulk of it can all be filmed like Dinner with Entree style, like in one location, like a restaurant or a club, you know, like members only club kind of thing. It's going to be great. Okay, come to LA. Think, okay, maybe we can find a place where, you know, they're under construction and they'll be happy to give it to us for a day, you know, something like that, or a place that's just closed, or a place that's, you know, opening, or somebody has a back room, you know, like something. No, not happening. Every place was just like, this is how much business we do a day. So you need to pay us $20,000 a day if you want to film here, and essentially like buy us out for the day.
Dang. It's like film, make a short film or buy a car.
It was so mean. So we just could not find, I wanted to initially find like, you know, a really LA feeling cafe. So it's like maybe the white, lots of white with like a little bit of light brown wood accents every place, lots of green plants. And I really was keen on getting that LA light in through the window. So you just feel that LA world outside right there that we don't have the LA light here in New York. We have New York light, which is also great, but different. You know, I wanted it to feel like the perfect amount of pretentious, essentially, you know, minimal pretentious, minimalism in its pretentious way. And that was just not going to be possible. So then we said, let's do members only club, like a Soho House type of scenario, you know, which is also not cheap, obviously. That's the thing when you're talking about rich characters. So definitely. So we ended up luckily finding a place that we could make look like a members only club. And it was also, we have a lot of really wide shots where it's not just, you're not just seeing the characters that are the main characters, but you're feeling the vibe. And if you notice, there's a lot of stuff going on sometimes in the background that mimics what they're talking about, you know?
Yeah.
And so for that, we needed space, which is more expensive. You know, it just gets more and more expensive. So I got really lucky with the, who knew that just shooting, you know, in that type of location would just be a total budget suck. But it was, but we also managed to find a place that really was willing to work with us, which was great, called the Fig House in LA. And I think we shot for 2 days at that location. And then we also, of course, needed a prison, which is awesome too. So it's just like, hey, no big deal, just give us a prison.
Just rent out a prison for a day. What could go wrong? You know, how hard could that be?
Exactly. We need a really rich members only club and then a prison. You know, they go together. It's perfect. We can be right next to each other.
Just bundle it up, a 2-for-1 deal.
Exactly. Just walk across the street, prison. No big deal. easy crew move. No, that was also insane. We had a hard time finding a prison. Surprise, surprise. You know, that would let us, you know, you have to get the, it's very regulated to shoot in a prison, and there, police that have to be with you and show up and kind of security and make sure that you're doing everything right. And then, you know, we actually did have quite an extensive crew and team and actors and everything. So to move far out of LA would have also kind of been a challenge. So we ended up finding a prison that had closed, where we still had to work with prison officials and the city and state to be able to get into that location. But it wasn't, you know, filled with criminals at the time, which does make things a little bit easier. So we ended up, I think, like finding it a day or two before we had to shoot there. So it was pretty much like, it was tight. it was like, we were definitely crossing our fingers, being like, this needs to come through for us. I love shooting in LA. It's fantastic, you know, great. I mean, part of the reason we wanted to shoot there was just the level of talent, actor-wise, you know, and since I was kind of talking about the culture that Hollywood and LA in particular export, it was important for me, for authenticity reasons, to also kind of live and breathe that and kind of work with people there. So
that's absolutely.
And it was great. And then the last location, which if you watch the credits all the way through, obviously we had to find a horse and a horse farm, also LA. So LA definitely came through for us. And
LA's got it all.
It sure does. It's set up for it in a great way. So.
Well, it's the only place that I've ever been to that you can go to the beach, you can go climbing and hiking in the mountains, or getting go snow, skiing or snowboarding all in the same day.
Exactly. So we definitely made use of that. Yeah. And I'm not one of those people that's like, oh, I hate New York, I love LA, or I hate LA and I love New York. I'm like, they're siblings.
Yeah.
You know, they... I love them both, and I like going between the two of them a lot. So I love shooting in both places for different reasons.
Oh, absolutely. It's all based on what the film needs. And I feel like any city, whether it's LA, New York, or anywhere in the Midwest or South, wherever you go, every city has its pros and cons. I mean, I like living in LA. That's where I live. But, you know, we have horrible traffic. We have smog. Everything's incredibly expensive. I mean... But there's a lot of great things about it. So it's all about, you know, what the pros and cons are and what you, what fits, you know, your needs.
Exactly.
So I know we already touched on this a little bit, but I'm curious to know how you went about when it came to, like, you know, the story and directing it. As you said, you know, these characters are trying to, you know, make, you know, crack the formula on like an Oscar winning film. And, you know, they talk about diversity and kind of like, quote unquote, checking the boxes to make the perfect film. I'm curious how you went about portraying that without it kind of like being in your face and being like too obnoxious. Like it felt like the right balance of like discussing it, but not overly discussing it.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was kind of delicately threaded throughout. I think, you know, this kind of, I like to say that I see it a little bit as a time capsule. So I wasn't necessarily trying to, cast a huge value judgment, on kind of what's going on culturally at our, you know, in our time right now. But I did see it as kind of an amalgamation, kind of a concentrated time capsule of just all the different kind of dynamics and confusions that are at play at the moment, you know, and how everybody is, trying to be quote unquote woke and walk a line and do things correctly. And, and kind of the trepidation, that goes along with that. And the confusion, and obviously these girls are very confused about it, and think that they have it all figured out, and think that they're super woke and got it totally under control. But at the same time, they're also, questioning themselves and each other, and trying to get it right. You know, and I guess that's something that I was picking up on just in our culture at large at the time, even the film festivals. You know, when I submit to any of the film festivals, they ask me, you know, what gender am I? What's my sexual orientation? How do I identify? Who do I make out with? You know, like a man, a woman, like what's my sexual orientation?
It's like, you know, why does any of that matter?
But they ask me, what is my race? You know, what is my ethnicity? What do I identify with, if not any of the things on the list to check in terms of ethnicity, in terms of that? What is my religion? All these things, every single festival is asking before you can even submit your film. And I didn't even, you know, I'm calling my friends going like, hey, is Judaism an ethnicity? I'm very confused because I'm Jewish, but I don't know where I fit in. I mean, Hitler would have killed me, but I don't know. I'm not sure. You know, is that an ethnicity? Is it a race? I don't know where I belong, you know, and then there's definitely an element of like, you know, I was just like, wow, this is extremely personal that I have to fill all this out just to, you know, apply. And then there's, you know, I feel weird about it. I'm also like a female filmmaker, and I've definitely suffered under the glass ceiling and kind of exclusionary things, and people thinking, well, in order to be a director, you have to portray authority in a room in a certain way, and you're 5'3" and a brunette and really kind of funny and cute in this unauthoritarian way. So how would we trust you with our budget? I don't think so. That's scary. Or why don't you direct the tampon commercial, but definitely not the football commercial? You know, we've all as females kind of, you know, been pigeonholed or, you know, put in certain boxes or directions. And it's only recent that, you know, we're even having some more female film directors. So I've definitely kind of been on the receiving end of the not so cool side of things. But at the same time, it's really weird to be like, yeah, I want my film to do well because I have a vagina. Like, that's also extremely just bizarre. You know what I mean? Like, I want to have opportunities and I want to be in the mix because of what I have to say and what's in my mind, not because of what my gender is or what my sexual orientation is, you know? So it also feels reverse demeaning to have to, you know, answer to that as well. So again, like, there's a lot of different dynamics at play. And I think all of our kind of cultural conundrums, everything that you're not supposed to talk about, if it's, you know, uncomfortable at the moment, you know, from Me Too to, you know, race relations to, you name it, we definitely put that in the film, which makes for very awkward, uncomfortable conversation. Kind of all the stuff you're not supposed to talk about. And we kind of managed to just like cram it all in there, all in the same piece.
Well, I think your film definitely does it really well. And it I liked that it touched on that. I found that interesting because not a lot of films really do, but I felt like it was done in a very, not like, you know, like you said, kind of like not in like, hey, you have to be woke, you know, always paying attention to all this stuff. It was done in a very tactful way.
Yeah, there are some, it was also, you know, an invitation to laugh and cringe at ourselves, you know, like, hey, if we can't all laugh and cringe at ourselves a bit, like, how can we really make some progress if we're keeping everything in the closet or trying to be so politically correct about everything? So there were definitely some interesting kind of moments and lines and pauses in the film where, you know, they think that they're talking to someone who, you know, is from one nationality, and then they realize, you know, they're getting corrected on what country she's from, and they don't even know that there's a difference in, you know, in what, yeah, It's like, well, you look this way, so I mean, what?
Yeah, exactly. So talking about, you know, going back to talking a little bit about the film festivals, I know your film was in Holly Shorts, so I'm curious to know how the reception has been, how your experience with Holly Shorts was, and the other film festivals.
Well, I have to say, I mean, the film itself was a little bit of a wild card. You know, we started the process, I think, like 2 years ago, you know, working on it. So I'm not sure actually if the film had come out sooner, if we would have gotten in any place, to be honest. I think it was a funny thing where we wrote it and worked on it early, and then all of a sudden, I don't know, maybe we would have gotten in, but I was definitely surprised that we got into as many festivals as we did. I didn't think we were going to get into any at all, because I thought the film would be a little too, I don't know, uncomfortable making, perhaps. And it turned out that we were very pleasantly surprised, and I felt very grateful. And it gave me a lot of hope that there were so many festivals that were willing to laugh with us, laugh and cringe with us, instead of feeling like it had to be a polarizing thing. So it was really wonderful to be welcomed with such open arms by a film community that I've wanted to be a part of for so long. So we got into some great festivals, and Holly Shorts, of course, being like up there as the holy grail of festivals, being like, you know, Holly Shorts. So it was definitely a dream come true to be able to, you know, to be included in that community. Of course, it was also sad that like the one time I spent all my savings on a film, finally, after all these years of being too scared to do it, you know, I get hit with the pandemic.
Yep. Yep.
I can't actually go and, you know, shake hands and meet people and have some drinks afterwards and see a whole audience react to your film and see what the group dynamic is of that, and then meet people afterwards and have discussions and, you know, all of that. So that aspect was definitely missed, but I think Holly Shorts did an amazing job at holding panels and putting people in kind of Q&As and doing kind of like meetup groups. I think what you could do online, they basically pushed to the max of what was possible. Of course, that is still zero replacement for in person, and everybody knows that. And that's why that's special. And that's why hopefully we're not gonna just, you know, stay forever with online festivals. It's a part of it, but nothing can replace the human touch. So I hope one day to be able to make something else again if the world comes back, and I hope to be able to meet people in person at Holly Shorts.
Absolutely. Well, I can say from personal experience, this is my, I think, third Holly Shorts, but the first time obviously doing it virtual. But the people who run Holly Shorts are amazing people. They're super nice, and it's always run very, very well. And I've met a bunch of great people from the festivals, and I've never had a bad experience at those festivals, other than, unless you count, you know, doing the red carpets and being under lights and doing, you know, 1,000 interviews each day. It can get tiring, but other than that, it's been good.
Give it to me. I want it all. No, it's fantastic. I agree. I think that the film selections are really terrific, and they put together a really stellar program of just, and how they group them and what kind of context they provide for their programming, and the caliber is really great. And that's one of the things that you just kind of miss, is the exchange with other filmmakers and other creators, you know, afterwards. Like, I actually did get approached quite a bit for sales afterwards, like for the film to be represented and then sold to different platforms. after its festival run, you know, and I was the most clueless person in the world. I was like, I don't know, this is so frightening. I don't know what to do. And you're sending me contracts and that's so scary and I don't know.
But that's awesome.
I didn't know how to, what to do with it because I have never done this. And you can't talk to other filmmakers and be like, so what do you do? Is this good? Is this horrible? Is this the death of me? Is this great? I have no idea, you know. You can't converse with others and find out about it and be like, am I signing my life away? You know, and now it's behind a paywall and nobody's going to see my film and I'm not going to be internet famous ever. You know, what's the deal? You don't know.
But I'll say, you know, I think that's in a good way. It's a good problem to have.
It is. And I just hope I get to, you know, meet more filmmakers and producers and actors and creators and programmers that can help you kind of learn the ropes a little bit of how this whole industry that I talk about in my film works.
Well, I definitely agree. You know, most people, they go see a movie or a short film and like, cool, you know, watch a 5, 10, 15, whatever the length is. And it's like, cool. But it's like, you know, as you and I both know, there's so much time and money and energy that goes into these that people will never, ever see.
Yeah.
So.
Totally. Totally. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, no, we've been very blessed to be included. And I think, you know, over 20, 25 film festivals now, you know, and many of them Oscar qualifiers. It was funny because I also knew this one definitely will never win an Oscar because it makes fun of the Oscars or makes fun with the Oscars. I don't know. You know, I knew that was never going to be... that was going to be
awesome. Imagine getting an Oscar for making a film about how to make an Oscar-winning film.
Yeah, I was like, that's just not going to happen. Not going to happen. They're not going to indict themselves. It's not going to happen. But it's still kind of just cool to you know, it's hypocritical of myself, but I don't care to just still be included, you know, in Oscar-qualifying festivals. There's still something very prestigious. You know, even though it's you know, it's all manufactured, it's still cool.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for talking to us today. Really appreciate it. And I'm very excited and happy for the film being made because I know how much, you know, time and money and effort it takes to make a film. And congratulations on getting into not only Hall of Shorts, but all of the other film festivals. That is quite an achievement.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for having me and talking about For Your Consideration. And it's still up at Cinejoy right now, which is the Cinequest Film Festival extended version Cinejoy. And we have yet to hear back from many others. So check back at fycfilm.com where I'm trying to update all my, you know, film festival activities so that people get a chance to watch it. And hopefully I'll figure out my distribution strategy one day and it'll come to a platform near you.
Well, I have heard if anyone from Netflix is listening, I do know I heard through the grapevine or from other creators that apparently they're going to be launching like a short film aspect of the streaming platform. So you never know.
You never know. You never know. Netflix, right here. Talk to me.
Exactly. Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, HBO. If anyone from there is listening, you know who to contact.
Exactly. Exactly. Come find me. I'm not too proud. Come find me.
Well, thank you again. And I wish you all the best of luck in the future.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
That's all for this episode. Be sure to tune in next time for another episode of the Gene Book Nerd Podcast. Take care and thanks for listening. Any parting words for our listeners before we go, Poppy?
This is Poppy Gordon and I'm the director of For Your Consideration and you are listening to GeneBookNerd.com.